I speak to you in the name of God. Amen. On my way to church this morning, I found this apple. It was like just outside the front door, like somebody had thrown it away. I picked it up just to keep the entrance clean, and then I noticed it had a bite out of it. Between the front door and the sacristy, I found myself thinking about this litter. At first, I was angry that somebody had just tossed a half-eaten apple on the church doorsteps. And as I was dropping it in the trash basket in the sacristy, I had this peculiar thought. I wonder whose apple it is. Then I had an even stranger thought. I wonder whose teeth would fit the bite marks. I had visions of a new version of Genesis Cinderella, with me trooping around the parish, trying to find the person whose teeth matched the bite mark on this apple. I'm not sure what kind of reaction I would get from you. Some of you would look at the bite mark, shake your heads as if to say, no way my teeth would fit that. Some of you would think I was more adult than normal. Many of you would cringe at the thought of fitting your teeth onto anything other than a shiny new apple. Well, let me just set this apple here on the pulpit, and you gaze on it during the rest of this sermon. And if you think of a likely suspect by the time I'm finished, please let me know. Today, on the first Sunday in Lent, we start with a story everybody knows by heart. Remember the key characters. There is God, the one who made the heavens and the earth, the one who formed man from the dust of the ground, the one who planted a garden in Eden, and the one who commanded, don't eat that tree. Then there's the man, the one made from the dust of the ground, the one placed in the garden, the one with the wife. Then there's the woman, the one taken out of the man, the one who was naked and not ashamed, the one who saw the tree. And finally, there's the serpent, the one who was more crafty than any other animal, the one who saw the tree before the woman, and the one who knew better than God. And you know the story. The man and the woman lived in the garden and enjoyed the garden. And one day the serpent convinced the woman that God had lied. As she took the fruit and ate it, and she gave some to her husband, and he ate it. And you could just hear the echo of the poet John Keats. There's a sigh for yes, and a sigh for no, and a sigh for I can't bear it. Oh, what can be done? Shall we stay or run? Oh, cut the sweet apple and share it. So that's where we begin this season of Lent, having our eyes jerked open and desperately searching for fig leaves. So what do we do? Is this a story about God? A story about sex? A story about evil? A story about whatever? Other than wanting to start near the beginning of the Bible, why do you suppose the church unfurls this sorry episode as we start our annual trek to the baptismal font and to that holy night of Easter, the night that is brighter than day? Well, Jesus himself felt the cold, scaly presence of the serpent and the tempter at the beginning of his journey. And it happened when he was famished. After his baptism, he went into the wilderness, was fasted 40 days and nights, and at the end of that time, he was famished. That's not just hungry. Famished is desperate. Famished nearly cannot be gratified. Famished opens your ears to hear all these strange things, and what you do when you're famished may open your eyes. In what is by now a tiresome litany of blame, we've grown accustomed to the wagging finger and the sputtered hissing, "That woman." When is the last time you heard anybody volunteer, "Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea culpa"? Or when is the last time you heard that confession out of sight and sound of cameras and microphones? Or it might mean something. So I work on this sermon. I went back and kind of entered the endless midrash on this story, listened to all the sages and scholars. I watched again the glorious television series on Genesis, moderated by Bill Moyers. Even that distinguished panel could not agree on the meaning of this story. I read feminist interpreters. I listened to Emily Dickinson and John Milton, Walt Whitman and W.H. Auden, and on and on. And I finally decided that this story lies at the root of what's going on in the world. Has been, always will be. And I can't decide whether in the end it's a story about God, about sex, about evil, or about sin. But mostly, I think it has something to do with the world we wake up in every day. And it certainly rings the changes on the world we enter when we are marked with an ashen cross. And that brings us back to the apple. Thought I'd forgotten, didn't you? Well, no, it doesn't belong to Mother Susan. Was it tossed away by the wardens or one of our choir members? Now that I look at it, I'm a little bit troubled. It looks kind of familiar. Oh, Lord, it's mine. I don't even remember taking this bite. Maybe my wife gave it to me. But now I do remember holding it when I came into church this morning, and I thought I had buried it in the corner there or nobody would find it. But it's mine. Something must be wrong with the winter apple crop. Just one bite, and it left a bitter taste in my mouth. So would you like a taste? Are you as famished as I was? Just one bite, huh? I know, it's tempting. Really nice apple. Very good apple. But when all the temptations were over, the devil left Jesus, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. We have started this season of Lent in the only place possible, with apple in hand and pulp in mouth and eyes opened and shame on our cheeks and fighting the great hunger that makes that tree look so lovely. I hope this story will stay with us for the whole season, because this much I know: unless my teeth fit the apple and I admit that it belongs to me, I will never find relief for my famine. And if I don't open my eyes now, I will never see Jesus risen from the dead. Amen. Just go stay right here.